RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday, July 18th, and you can feel it in the air. Wasn't there a song, by the way, that was something like that? Something in the air? You guys who know music know what I'm talking about. I have no clue. I do remember there was a song like that, but I feel it in the air. I feel the sense of anticipation from fans now. Just a lot of things, you know, involved in a lot of podcasts, you know, getting a lot of feedback from fans. I don't feel it because it never leaves me working football 365. You know, it's the importance of this time of year to the football season from an evaluation standpoint is critical and is most important when it comes to, you know, to get you ready for the season and to take you through the season. So that's what we try to do at LandryFootball.com. But I know most of you, listen, you got things to do. You got summertime. The fall is approaching, although the weather around the country will not be any indication of that. I get the sense. I think it's maybe the college media days. We're not far away from the start of a couple of training camps in the NFL. So I think folks are starting to get a feel for it. So we're excited that you're excited. We're excited all the time. And remind you that because we say excited all the time at LandryFootball.com, you can check us out. Breaking down the game, inside the film room, getting you on top of everything on a daily basis, several times a day with the breakdowns of rosters and teams, getting you ready for all of that. Check us out. Check out the scouting season sale that's taking place right now on LandryFootball.com. That'll get you for the entire football season, take you through all of even recruiting season and free agency and the draft and all the way through next year at this time. Take you through the football season. If you don't want to do the whole year and take advantage of the great discount, try it out for a month, 3 months, whatever your preference. You'll love it, and you'll see the game at a different level. All right, we're going to pick up today where we left off on offensive line play, giving you an idea what we're doing. For those of you that follow a lot of our podcasts, what we're going to try to do here on this podcast is a little different. One of the reasons why I'm involved in so many podcasts is there's so many things to talk about. Think about the NFL, a lot of teams, more teams in college football. So doing conference podcasts and spending more time in each individual conference, giving an overview on a college podcast, an overview of the NFL, it's allowed me the opportunity because I could not do it justice. Can you imagine trying to keep a podcast to a reasonable amount of time, breaking down everything? It just would take too long, and it would not fit here on this podcast. So what I like about what I'm doing and what I really am excited about with the Landry Football Podcast, which you're listening to right now, is to take you places where nobody else can take you, where you're not going to hear it anywhere else. Because you don't have people with the experience on it, and you don't have the know-how to be able to explain it to you. And so one of the things that I like to try to do is to take you inside the game. You hear it a lot around draft time, how to break down players, how to evaluate guys. Well, as we're getting towards the season, what we have done here, guys, for the last several weeks is break down how to put together a playbook, how that's installed, what's the quarterback's role, how does he prepare, how does he call plays, how does he adjust at the line of scrimmage, how do the running backs handle their responsibilities, how do the receivers and tight ends handle their responsibilities, how do the offensive linemen, that's what we're on right now. We're going to finish up today, and we're going enough in depth to get you to understand, but later on we'll get in every one of these subtopics we could go weeks on, but we're not going to I think it's important to kind of get through the elementary phases of this. We're taking it beyond elementary right now, but we want to make sure that we kind of keep it to where people can follow and get a feel for it and have a better understanding. So we're taking you through this process. That's what I'm excited about this. So it'll help you understand the game better when you watch it in person or on TV, what to look for. You're going to get a different view of the game. And so that's what we're hoping to do. And we've got a couple of good questions that was sent in related to the X's and O's topic. And if you've got one on anything, really, we'll address anything here on football that you want me to talk about. I'll address it here at LandryFootball.com. Just go to contact Chris. We're really excited about, again, what we've got headed in the approach for this season. I want to start today with a couple of questions. Richard asks, Chris, obviously we know Jamarcus Russell was a bust. Can you explain why the Raiders decided to take Jamarcus Russell when you told them not to, and who recruited Jamarcus to LSU? Well, Jamarcus was recruited in large part by Jimbo Fisher, who was on Saban's staff. He was the key reason. He wasn't the area recruiter, but he was the main guy that recruited him. Why did the Raiders decide to take him? Because they fell in love with his physical skills. And the Raiders, under Al at that time, didn't worry so much about guys' character because they had success with a bunch of characters. Guys that weren't the best. Listen, I'm really not interested in choir boys. I like guys that are kind of on the edge, but they also know where the line is and they know how to stay on the right side of it, maybe straddle it. But I like guys with an edge. But the Raiders, when you do that and you're out of control and you don't have the ability to kind of keep rein that in and you don't have stability, and when you have an organization that's run by an owner, even though he's a football guy, and Al was, players don't respect the coaches as much. You know, for example, Al gave a lot of leeway to John Madden. John Madden handled characters well. And those guys went out and played, and it was a little bit different era. Well, as the coaching changes took place, Tom Flores had success, but a lot of other guys, the Raiders, as coaches, didn't have success. They were more figureheads. So the players didn't respect the coaches. And the players start making more money in the modern era. And, you know, Al was just kind of, as he got older, you figure it out. That's the way we did it in 1968. That's the way we did it in 1974. Why the hell can't you do it now? And his lack of recognition of how the athlete of today got to be more me-oriented, that became an issue. And they weren't very good teams for many of Al's years, you know, after he had a lot of success, of course, that's what contributed to it. So, you know, I thought, last guy's talent, it wasn't for the lack of knowledge. They just thought he could overcome it. Let me just tell you this. You can get away to some degree with a guy's character flaws at some positions. As long as he keeps his body in shape, as long as he works hard, he could be a bad egg. You don't have to be a great leader. And you can be a good pass rusher. You can be a good running back. You can be a good receiver. The quarterback position, never works. Oh, but Chris, Kenny Stabler never worked hard and he drank beer. He did it in a different era. People didn't spend time in the weight room as much. Kenny was prepared. He prepared in his own way. Yeah, he lived the good life. So did Bobby Lane in the day. There are a lot of guys that did it in the past. Different world today. Much more sophisticated game. Much more involved with the coaches calling plays and making adjustments. It's a much more cerebral game. It was much more of a free-flowing game in the 60s and 70s and before, to where quarterback will call a play. The playbooks weren't that extensive, not compared to what they are in the modern age. So you better know what to call. You better know how all the adjustments to it. Again, if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard just a fraction of some of the things I've explained to you. Give you an idea and an overview. It's a completely different world. So, listen, if you're not a leader, and by a leader, I mean you don't need to be a guy that talks, okay? Talking and leadership are two different things. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. If you're a leader and you're vocal, great. If you're a leader and you're quiet, great. Are you a leader? What makes you a leader? You got to know what you're doing. You got to know from the quarterback position, that offense cold. You got to know what everybody's supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it. And you need to be in that meeting, sitting in the front row, and you need to be pointing things out because your teammates are going to have confidence in you based upon their ability to know that you know what you're doing. Because when you get in that huddle, you don't command a huddle with, hey, shut up, I'm leading this huddle. That's not leadership. It's shut up, I'm leading this huddle. And the guy that knows this offense cold and knows it better than I do is talking, and we're leading, we're following him, and he's leading us. That's what it's all about. If you have a limited ability to learn and limited ability in terms of effort, that's a disastrous combination. And if you got some character flaws, never works. Never works. Again, you have some hellraisers that, I mean, Favre wasn't the smartest guy. He couldn't sit there and draw it up on the board, but he had an understanding of what he needed to do, and he had a natural body where he kept himself in his shape in his own way. So he got it done. Okay, so, and you could do it. Now, you could say that if he were more cerebral, and maybe he did things a little different, he could have even been better. He's a Hall of Famer. Could have even been better. Be that as it may, he was able to get it done in a very big way. But Jamarcus was not that type of guy. He was a guy that was limited capacity to learn and way below average. He was, I would say, below average capacity to learn and way below average willingness to learn. He's lazy. He always was. Did I know him better than Bruce Kebrick, who's with the Raiders, the main guy scouting him for Allen, the Raiders? Yeah. But Bruce knew everything. And I think Bruce had some concerns, but they were going to take him. That's that. So they did it. That's the reason why they did it. Richard also asked me about a report that was written by a writer on Florida State. The writers did a supposed hit piece on Jimbo Fisher for letting the program slip in that report. It also puts the blame on Jameis Winston as well. In your opinion, does Jameis deserve some of the blame for the FSU program to slip? No, I don't think he deserves the blame for the slip. What I think is that there was perhaps some character flaws with Jameis that may be permeated through the program, but that's up to the head coach to control that. So, listen, you can blame Jameis for being someone that is of a questionable character, but I think they could have done a better job of disciplining him. They enabled him at Florida State, and so that, I thought, led to some discipline problems in Florida State. That's not on Jameis Winston. That's Jameis Winston didn't run the program. Jimbo did. And so Jimbo didn't do as good a job of that as he could have. So I put that on Jimbo. And, you know, it's always the coach's responsibility. Coach has the power to adjust that and modify that, change that behavior. That's his responsibility. You know, if you want to say that Jameis was of questionable character, you're right. But, you know, again, he can't do what he did on or off the field without being, you know, enabled at FSU. So to me, that's kind of the way I look at it. Let me say this. Jimbo Fisher did a great job at Florida State. And Jimbo Fisher got frustrated because the administration, which had been promised him facility upgrades, that was not going well. Not going on his time frame. In his philosophy, and rightly so, you want me to compete and beat Clemson, You want us to be on the same level as an Alabama, an Auburn, an LSU, whatever, Clemson? Well, act like it administratively. Make the commitment facility-wise to make us the best, because we're not. And Florida State is not. They've fallen behind Clemson big time. Clemson's got, you know, 10 out of 10 facilities, and Florida State's, a, you know, three notches below. That's not where you want to be. That's going to affect your ability to do the job. And I do think that Jimbo Fisher got frustrated and didn't do a very good job in the latter part of his career with coaching staff evaluation, recruiting evaluations, and I don't think they did a very good job coaching in his last year. But Jimbo Fisher accomplished a lot of things at Florida State and is an elite coach, a far better coach than Willie Taggart. I think Florida State's program now, as they're trying to get the facility upgrades, they're still behind facility-wise, and now they've got inferior coaching. Well, Jimbo may have been an inferior coach in his last year, but the likelihood is that Willie Taggart's going to be an inferior coach throughout his career because he's not nearly as good. Jimbo's going to have more success at A&M. Now, for people who don't know how to evaluate, they're going to look and say and look at the records. Well, Florida State's record should be better than A&M's because the competition, level of competition, is not the same. So you can't look at a 7-6 record or 8-4 records, 7-5 records or 8-4 records and say they're just the same. Of course not. A&M's got as tough a schedule as it is in college football. And if they do a practically perfect job this year, they can't be better than 8-4. There are four teams on their schedule at A&M personnel-wise, can't beat. Now, one of them is Clemson, and they almost beat them last year. One of them is LSU, who A&M beat last year. I coached LSU last year. People will look at the bad play calls. But the fact that LSU was more gifted personnel-wise but was in the game is an indication of the job that Jimbo did. So, and his staff did. So I think that, Florida State, if they would have been smart, and listen, I can't tell somebody how to run their program, and I don't know their resources or finances, but they made the biggest mistake they ever did by not getting out in front of their facility upgrades. Had they done that with Jimbo Fisher, Jimbo Fisher is a better football coach than Dabo Swinney. Knows more football, more involved in the offense. Now, Dabo hires well and is a good salesman, but Jimbo Fisher recruited well and he developed well, and he got guys to overachieve. They were competing at a very high level. If they had stayed out in front, Jimbo would have been there. I mean, that's a place that he could have stayed there forever, and had he not butted head with the administration, not been frustrated, you know, Florida State would be right neck and neck with Clemson today. They're not. And that's how a program can go from being top five every year under Bobby Bowden to, oh, they're not as good anymore. Well, it's not as good as Bobby Bowden. No, the biggest issue is that the program's not as good. Clemson's gotten better. Clemson's taken advantage of the money and improving their facilities. And they've got a good coach who's become a great coach because they've surrounded him in a great situation. Florida State had a better coach that they didn't support well enough early on, and it led to the problems where he kind of had a bad attitude towards the end, and he did a bad job with his staff, and he did a bad job of recruiting, and now they got a mess at Florida State with an inferior program relative to what they normally are and a much inferior head coach than they used to have. That's bad news followed by more bad news followed by more bad news. So that's that. All right, let me get to my offensive line. Where we left off, talked about blocking schemes. And it doesn't matter which blocking scheme your team uses. There's a lot you can pick up by watching the offensive line. Okay? Now, I will tell you that watching TV tape is not good for evaluating football. Sorry to tell you, maybe fun, exciting. You can kind of get a periphery, but you don't. If you're telling me you're evaluating the offensive line on TV, you're kidding yourself. You don't know what the hell you're looking at because you can't evaluate what you need to do. You can't. So stop it. But there are things, some things you can see. The first thing I'd ask you to look at if you're watching a game in person, and by the way, if you've got what is considered a premium seat at a game, it's a sideline seat, you're not watching and you're not evaluating offensive line. You can't see that. All you can see is somebody gets sacked. You have no clue what you're looking at because you can't see what is most important to see. But the first thing I'd ask you to look at is look at the stance of the lineman. If the tackle is down on the three-point stance, you can see that from a TV angle. You can anticipate a running play unless it's third and 14. You can pretty much going to be a high percentage run play. If they're standing in a two-point stance, percentages will tell you it's a passing play. All right. Now, in terms of a three-point stance, trying to determine whether it's a run or pass, there are other things you can see. Here's what I always taught defensive linemen. Watch the offensive linemen and look at their knuckles. If you watch the offensive lineman's knuckles and their knuckles are white, or for a black player, if you see the knuckles whiten up a little bit, that tells you they're leaning forward and they're coming off on a run and play. If they don't, the blood's not rushing because they're not leaning hard and it's a soft stance, as we call it, that's going to be a pass play. That's why offensive line coaches have their offensive linemen tape the knuckles. Watch it. How many offensive linemen have their knuckles taped? That's why. You can't read the knuckles. So that's taken out a little bit. So how do you look at it? You can look on the side, depending on your seat front on your on TV or your seat in the stands. You can kind of get an indication if a guy's leaning a little bit forward. Leaning forward is where you see the knuckles whiten a little bit. That is run. That's a run blocking stance. Okay. If you can't tell while the players are lined up, you don't have the view, then watch the height of the lineman after the snap. If the helmets are raised upward, it's a pass or a draw, depending on the selling of the threat of the pass. You know, if it's a well-designed draw, the hat's up. They're selling pass and they're running it and draw. That's what a draw play is. Okay, and we call it defensively seeing the hat. Seeing hat. Okay, that's the defensive lineman seeing hat. If you're in the stands and you're relatively close to the field, you can tell what's coming by just keeping your ears open. Pass blocking doesn't have the same sound. Run blocking has the pop. If you want to see where most individual blocks succeed or fail, keep an eye on which player takes the third step in the sequence. I call it the third step rule. The offensive lineman is going to take the first step. Defenders are usually going to be faster than offensive linemen, but any speed advantage is negated because the offensive line knows the snap count, the defender doesn't. Okay, it's minimized somewhat in road games in front of large crowds, but as a general rule, that's the case. As the linemen take the read step, the defender takes his first step. To be successful, blocker has to take the next step. If the defender is quick enough to take that third step in the sequence, he'll be there. He'll be the first to get his hands in the position on his opponent's body. Now, he's in a good position to bull rush the blocker when he can do that. Who wins the third step? That'll tell you everything right there. You're going to know on the third step, if you follow this rule, the success or failure of the play. So you're watching a game. You're going to know when a guy's ready to beat, a defender's ready to beat an offensive lineman, or whether the offensive lineman's going to beat the defensive lineman. You can train yourself on that. Watch that. That's going to be key. It's critical that offensive lineman takes that third step to initiate contact with width if he's going to make a successful block. When two players come together, one of them is going to have a wider base than the other. Whoever it is will have the best chance of holding his ground and winning the one-on-one battle. The other thing I want you to look for is watch the center before the snap and see what he's looking at. Remember, he's the one making the protection call in all likelihood. So try to envision what he's seeing. He's looking to see how many defenders are in the box and have to be accounted for. And you can count right along with them. Center is also keeping an eye on the other team's best pass rusher. So if you got an elite pass rusher on the other side, it's moving from side to side, the center is trying to locate him. That way, if the game plans call for the line to slide protect towards that rusher, the center is going to slide to the line right or left accordingly. The other thing you need to pay attention to, the mic calls. They do a nice job in the game with the microphones so that the boom mic so you can pick this up. You hear this, 52 the mic, 52 the mic, 50 the mic, 50 the mic, 56 the mic. Okay, you hear that. That's a mic call. Explain what this is. When you see the center and the quarterback pointing to the defense, they're trying to locate the middle backer. Identifying the mic, 52 is the mic, 56 is the mic. Okay, identifying the mic, that's how they do it, is how the linemen decide who's going to be responsible for the guys they think are coming. The actual mic middle linebacker on your roster, on your depth chart might not be in the game, folks. So you're thinking, oh, no, Joe Smith is the middle backer. He's not in the game. Well, what am I going to do? There's no middle backer. There's always a middle backer. Just the mic backer on your roster, on your depth chart, it's not in the game. Maybe taken out for another guy that's listed as a Will or a Sam backer. One of them is going to be playing mic. You might have a safety playing the mic backer. They're just getting a little faster and smaller, but somebody's playing the mic. Okay? Just like a safety comes down in the box and plays a Will backer position. Well, he's a safety. They don't have a linebacker. They don't have a Will backer in the game. Yeah, he's got a Will backer in the game. It's the safety playing the Will backer. So understand the difference there. So the mic and Will backer switch places to disguise what they're doing. What the center and the quarterback are actually declaring is who they consider to be the mic on that particular play. And everybody's blocking assignment is dictated from there. The running back, for instance, is responsible for the defender who is lined up outside whoever has been designated as the mic backer. So here's the thing. Even if you guess wrong, as long as you identify the mic as you see it, then it sets the protections for everyone. So everyone now knows who they have to block because everybody's set. The only thing is, all right, who's got the remaining guy? Well, in this case, it's going to be the back. The back's going to line up outside the mic backer. 52 is the mic, 52 is the mic. Well, you're the running back. You hear that, you know who's outside the mic. 52 is the mic. Who's lined outside of 52? There he is. That's my guy. I got him. You get how this works now? When you see the center pointing to the defense like that, it's usually safe to expect a pass play. Now, what you're seeing more and more are centers and quarterbacks that go through the exercise of declaring the mic and then running the ball. It gets them thinking pass, 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 and run it. So this definition of, you know, who are you going to block? It comes through the passing game ritual. But if you do it consistently and you run out of it, you can have a lot of success. You can also tell what kind of day a guard or tackle is having by watching how long he can keep his shoulder square to the line of scrimmage. If you're seeing a lineman being turned by a defender or bailing on the snap of the ball, it's a good indication that the guy he's trying to block is too much for him to handle. That should signal to the offense it's a good time to run a draw block or a trap block against that defender. On a draw block, the guard allows his man to get upfield, pass the ball carrier. On the trap block, the guard who is being dominated starts a play looking like he's going to block his defender, but instead slides over towards another defender or acts like he's been beat. Then the other guard comes from the opposite side and replaces the first guard, thereby surprising or trapping the defender, why we call it a trap block. Okay, it's a great way to slow down aggressive defensive tackles. Run some traps. All offensive line stinks. We're never going to do anything. Good coaching can't make offensive linemen great, but they could make them better and more effective as a unit by coaching. If you're smart, if you're tough, if you're physical, and you've got minimum requisites athletically, you can be a good offensive line. Offensive line coaching is the most important position coach that you have on your staff. I just gave you an example. You got a guy that can't block the defensive tackle he's up against. This guard can't block him to save his life. We're going to trap that defensive tackle. You do it a few times, and all of a sudden, he's reading before he's coming off the ball. And guess what? Now you can run a few plays where if you don't want to run a trap, now the guard is not facing a defensive tackle that's teeing off the snap because he's taking some read steps. There are things you can do, coaching, to get the most out of your players. If you really want to watch the game from the inside out, that's what you really need to do in person. Buy a ticket for a seat in the end zone. You can get a whole different perspective, and the only perspective you can from offensive line play. You can't get a good sense from the TV angle, but from the end zone, you can study the splits along the line. Okay, the splits, line splits, are the distances, the space between the tackles and the guards in the center, and the tackle, the tight end. Those players should be about 3 feet from each other, but teams will adjust their splits to create matchup advantages, to make adjustments, or to expose the defense's vulnerability. You see, a Washington State, for example, has enormous line splits. Okay, well, the ball comes out so quickly, they're not worried about gap penetration because the ball's coming out and it's going out wide in bubble screens. So what they want to do is get you so spread out that when they want to run the football, they run it because they got five, six guys most in the box, and it's very easy to run. Guys got to come over from the perimeter to tackle them if you block it well up front because you got everybody accounted for and usually an extra guy that can lead the way. When you notice there's a universal tightening of the splits along the entire line, it's a signal that they're trying to prevent a penetrating defensive front. Good penetrating defensive front, reduce your line splits. What you're doing is you're narrowing the gaps to make it tougher for the defender to fit through them. If you see a consistent widening of the splits, the line is preparing for a two-gap defense, giving each lineman extra space he is individually responsible for. If the guard splits 6 extra inches from the center and the tackle splits 6 extra inches from the guard, the edge rusher has to line up 1 foot wider, which just might be enough to keep him from reaching the quarterback. You get what we're talking about? We're talking geometry. That's what it is. Often you'll see inconsistent spacing. For example, the guard and the center may be standard 3 feet apart, but the split between the guard and the tackle is only 2 feet. That's a pretty good indication that there's a run coming and that the guard and tackle will be involved in some sort of a block combination. If you're going to run a combination block between two guys, being a little bit closer together increases the ability to be in symmetry, be symmetric, a little bit closer. Those are things you can notice. Make a mental note, make a written note, watch a game that way. If you have a chance to get a hold of some tape that you can see, end zone view, that's everybody says all 22, all 22. All 22 is great for secondary play, routes, quarterback reads. They're useless for offensive line evaluation. Get a hold of some end zone tight line, you can see the whole game at a different level. When we watch these games and break down these games, we're watching it from that angle. We're watching from both angles. We watch each play from different angles. It's called intercut. Watch it all 22, then you see the same play and the line split. So I want you to also watch the split between the tight end and the tackle and the impact it has on the defense. If the tight end starts to flex further and further out, the tight end may start the game in a 3-foot split and then have the Sam or strong side backer on his outside shoulder. The next play, he's out 4 feet, and eventually he's out 5 feet, where he's head-on with the linebacker. It's a subtle adjustment that can set up the opportunity for the tight end to hook the Sam on a toss strong side. Okay, understand this. Geometry, right? You're lining up, and the Sam backer is on your outside shoulder. Okay, away from the line of scrimmage on the outside shoulder. To get outside him and hook him, it's going to be hard. He's outside. He's got leverage against you. He's coming down on you. Now I'm gonna line up a little bit wider, a little bit wider. Okay, now he's your head up on him, maybe a slight edge. He's slightly head up on you or slightly inside. All of a sudden now, boom, you got one step and you got him hooked. And you got toss play off and running. You set that up over periods. Good play calls and good play designs are done several plays in advance. You set plays up. It's not the play you call as much as the play you calls to set up the calls. That's a real good indicator. When the tight end is split out as a wide receiver, turn your eyes to that Sam Backer, because that's exactly what the quarterback's doing. The quarterback's looking at the Sam Backer when the tight end's out at receiver. If the Sam goes wide with the tight end, it sets up the possibility for a run to that side. The people think, oh, man, the tight end's out flex. That's just not a good, you know, run blocking set. Wrong. It increases your run ability. If he splits the difference halfway between the tight end and the tackle, you know the defense is in a zone. If the Sam comes up all the way back inside and into the box, there's a pass opportunity for the tight end against the safety. So again, tight end splits out. Turn your eyes to a Sam Backer. If the Sam goes wide with the tight end, it's setting up real good possibility for a run to that side. If he splits out halfway between the tight end and the tackle, you know they're in a zone, because he's not in a position to cover man there. So you know it's zone, pre-snap. That's why your alignment causes them to have an alignment, which should tell you pre-snap whether they're in man or zone. If the Sam comes all the way back inside and into the box, there's a pass opportunity for the tight end against the safety. So listen, these are all little things to look for that I think are going to be real interesting in terms of increasing your knowledge and understanding of the game, whether you watch game at any level. Now, I want to answer a couple of questions before we call it a day in a week here in this show. And comes from Jerry, who asks, do offensive linemen have to be smarter than defensive linemen? Generally speaking, yes. Defensive linemen are read and react guys. Offensive linemen have to diagnose what the defense is doing, make the proper protection calls, and have to know what the other guys are going to do, and then execute those changes. Those adjustments are really critical job descriptions for the linemen. Offensive linemen score higher normally on intelligence tests and football IQ tests. And listen, offensive linemen tend to stay in school a little bit longer, so they have more snaps, more repetitions in working their craft than defensive linemen do. So all that contributes to, yeah, I think offensive linemen are smarter, and they have to be. Yes, defensive linemen, it's, look, they either are, they're going to attack a gap. They're responsible for a gap. And then they need to know when they're going to run a twist. You know, they need to space out the timing of their twist. But this, it's not a lot of diagnosing, not nearly as much diagnosing on the defensive side than on the offensive side. Does that mean that some defensive linemen couldn't do it if they were offensive linemen? They're playing defensive linemen only because they're not smart enough to play offensive line? No, it doesn't mean that. You know, it doesn't mean every defensive lineman's dumb. Okay, but the job description on the offensive side is much more cerebral than the defensive line side. What can an offense do to boost a running game if it doesn't have a true feature back? Since you talked about great backs making offensive line. Listen, I think running game as a whole is about commitment. Okay, or you're willing to run the ball on second down after running first and gaining no yards. Okay, will you run the ball when you're down 7 points? Now listen, what do the announcers and the media and the fans say when, can't believe it, hard-headed coach, running it into the, they can't get any yards and they're running it. Stupid coaching. It's what fans say, it's what the media says. Folks, commitment to the run is the key to being able to take advantage of the defense down the road. If the defense doesn't think you're going to run it, if that you are going to be drop back and pass all the time, it's going to be a lot easier to defend. Ever see a team that averages 50, 60, you know, passes a game, 70, you know, get in that range, win a championship? You don't see that. Now you're seeing more and more teams work the bubble screens, which is an extension of the running game. You see that. Remember the rule of 50. Always remember the rule of 50 in a game. Take pass completions and add to rushing attempts. I don't care if a play gets 0 yards. You're having an impact on that defense when you're running it. You may not see it as a fan, and the media may not see it, but that effect will slow down a pass rush. It'll make defenses think that there's a chance to run it, and it will take away something that is usually a huge strength, is that when they can tee off and run against you, they got a big advantage. When they can't do that because of the threat of you to running, the threat of you of running it, it makes you be more effective throwing the football. It's as simple as that. So when you're down seven, you're not having success running the ball. If you get away from the running game, the game will get away from you very often. The great teams, the Saints, you know, the Alabama's, the Clemson's in college ball. Watch how they run the football. Running it, staying committed to it, making people believe that there's a threat that you can run it, that creates the opportunities in the passing game. That's what's significant. That's what makes your defense better, too, because the defense is not on the field for as many snaps, and the gap, the amount of time, like not play clock time, but just time between your last snap on defense and your next snap coming in, that's widened. Your defense is fresher. It's better, less vulnerable. All things that go and misunderstood. Now, listen, I'm not talking about running the football with 15 seconds left and you're down 7 points and you got 80 yards to go, okay? Be smart about this. Understand what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in setting the flow of the game. If you're willing to do those two things, run the ball on second down after you had 0 yards on first down, and if you run when you're down 7 points, you're committed to running the football. I don't care how many yards you are. If the rule of 50 were how many rushing yards of over five, no. It's rushing attempts and pass completions. Think about that. Rushing attempts and pass completions work together because the amount of rushing attempts will have a positive effect or a negative effect, if it's low, on your passing completions. That's key. It's if you're committed to establishing the threat of a run game in the minds of opposing coaches, you increase your chances of winning by a large margin. So two important things to keep in mind. All right. Where we're headed next on Tuesday. We're going to talk about defensive fronts. You hear a lot about 4-3, 3-4. What does it all mean? I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to tell you what it all means. Okay, I'm going to tell you what it's all about. We're going to get into that next. Taking you through football, X's and O's style from inside the film room. That's what we do here for you at the Landry Football Podcast. Again, got any questions, send them over. Hit contact Chris on the website. Check out what we got going on the website. All the podcasts, all the breakdowns, take advantage of it. Become a member of LandryFootball.com today because you're missing a whole lot if you're not. Appreciate you joining us. Have a great weekend. Another step closer to football. But football's here with us every day, all year long at LandryFootball.com. Check us out there and check us out here on Tuesday for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The best way to garner respect in the workplace is to give respect to people who came before you. What does that mean? Know the history of the company. Know the traditions of the company. Be aware of the processes that the company has in place. Don't take them for granted, and don't judge them without contemplation. Be mindful of the manners and the protocol that are in the current workplace. It's little things that earn respect. Stand up when somebody enters your workspace. Stand up every time. Look people in the eye long enough to discern eye color, definitely in the first 90 seconds. Memorize everyone's name. That should be day one. Use their name when you speak with them. Bob, is that right? Absolutely. Mary, thank you so much. Use their name. Listen without interrupting. nod in understanding their point of view. I didn't mean you agree, but you acknowledge that I get it, I understand. When you increase your own respect within a company, your paycheck's going to get bigger, guaranteed. Pay attention to detail. Be the MVP of the office. You make everyone better. It's okay to let everyone have their credit. It's going to happen. But review all your work at least twice. You don't assume anything. Check it. Double check it. Be fastidious. Pay attention to detail. And I guess for a long-term career, you got to be an expert at something. Come on, we're still in a supply and demand world. Volunteer for every project in a company. Learn everything from top to bottom. And then when your passion's ignited about something, well, maybe you found that path of expertise.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.